Journeying through the book of Romans, what I call the road to freedom, the true road to freedom. I'm going to preach this from memory because I didn't bring my outline. You turn to Romans chapter 10, verses 5. We're going to look at beginning with verse 14 through 21. Remember last week I said that there's no distinction Paul says there's no distinction now between Jew and Gentile. And you have to see that, keep this all in context. And that's what so many don't do. And they want to say that there's a contradiction and there's conflict between Paul there in Romans 9 and Romans 10. But there's not. Not when you keep it in context. Romans 9 is all about the fact that God chose the Jews, the nation of Israel, for a purpose. You see, we misunderstand the Old Testament and about the nation of Israel when we think it has all to do with salvation of the Jews. That's not correct. God set the nation of Israel aside and the Jews for a purpose. He elected them and chose them, not per se for salvation. He didn't choose just certain people for salvation and others for destruction or condemnation, like is wont to be taught. He chose the Jews, elected them for service, for a purpose. We have to see that because people are missing that even today. As I said last week, there are some who are going around and who are teaching that God has a salvation, and I've heard this. This is actually from a deacon in a church a few years ago. Actually say that some of these things that are being taught, that God has a salvation plan, a plan of salvation for us who are Gentiles. But then again, he has a different salvation plan for the Jews. See, and that's where they want to confuse some of the prophecies, especially like in Ezekiel, chapter 38, 39, so forth, that God's going to save all the Jews in the end. And so in the end run, that's when we, next week, when we come to Romans chapter 11. Which people misunderstand that. But chapter 9 was all about the fact that God chose the nation of Israel for service. That was his whole purpose throughout. It wasn't him choosing out a people and say, okay, guys, I'm going to save you, and through the rest of you, the rest of the world is going to get saved. No, God chose the nation of Israel for service, and that service was that it was through the nation of Israel, that through the Jews, Messiah would come. The Christ would come. His Son would come. That was the whole purpose of the nation of Israel. Yes, it's true that Jesus said what? Salvation comes through who? Through the Jews. He said he first came to the house of Israel. What that means is that God offered, and this is what chapter 10 is all about, God offered salvation to the Jews through his Son. He offered salvation to them. It was their choice. Remember as I said last week, and when you look at the in the Gospel of John, Jesus said, you search the Scriptures. You call Moses as your father, as well as Abraham, but you search the Scriptures. And yet, you don't understand. You don't see, and Jesus in effect was saying, you don't see me? And that's why he said, you're blind. You have ears to hear, but you don't hear. You have eyes to see, but you don't see. Now, Jesus wasn't saying that they didn't have physical ears that they couldn't hear out of. He didn't say that they need hearing aids like I have and others of us have. He didn't say that. He didn't mean that they didn't have actual eyes that they couldn't see. He was talking spiritually. Just as God told Ezekiel that the nation of Israel was doing in Ezekiel's time. You have eyes to see, but do not see. You have ears to hear, but you do not hear. So, we come to verses 14 through 21. Because chapter 10 moves on now, and it's still in the context of the Jews. Still in the context of the Jews, Paul is answering an objection that might be there. Well, you know, maybe the Jews had an excuse after all. Maybe the excuse that they don't understand. You know, but in effect, that they're ignorant. Paul is going to show us through these verses that ignorance is not an excuse. How do we relate that to today, to us, the church, and to people? Not just the Jews, but to people around us. Are people ignorant today? Can they use ignorance, that Pat? Can they use ignorance as an excuse? Are there people who would use ignorance as an excuse? You betcha they would. But in our day and age, in all of our technology and stuff that we have, can they really use ignorance as an excuse for their unbelief? Well, see, that's what Paul is answering here. Paul says here, beginning with verse 14, and Paul uses, he quotes some Old Testament passages here. He says, remember last week we talked about, for whoever will call on the name of the Lord will be saved. Now, people want to look at this and think that calling, all that means is all you have to do is say, you call out. Hey, I believe. Or you say to Jesus, maybe not in front of people, but privately, I believe in you, Jesus. So I'm calling on the name of the Lord, and I'm going to be saved. That's all I have to do. But Paul's going to show us, and he said that earlier in Romans 6. He's going to show us that there's more to calling than just saying his name. See, and that's what people think, that all you have to do is say his name. But look at what Paul says. Paul's going to lay out the conditions, and now he's going to go in reverse order here. He says here, how then? He's asked these questions, and he is expecting a positive or an affirmative answer in the text here. What's that, Pat? What verse? Romans 10, verse 14. How then will they call on him in whom they have not believed? You see that? What has to come first? Paul's laying it out.
Well, you should, Paul, you say you call on him and you be saved. So then how then will they call on him in whom they have not believed? Now, you have to understand that in the Greek, in the actual text here, in whom is not in the text. On him is not in the text. Literally, the Greek says, how will they call? They have not believed. Now our text does say, how then will they call on him whom they had not believed? But again, literally, I said, the text says in the Greek, how will they call him they have not believed? Then he said, how will they believe in him whom they had not heard? And how will they hear without a preacher? I want to stop there for just a minute, because I don't know about you, but I've heard this over the years, and I've had many discussions with a number of people who believe that in order to be saved, and in order to have Jesus as Lord and to be saved, you don't need this. I have heard it said that you don't need that. You don't need someone to preach, or the word that's used there in the Greek is herald. You don't need someone to do that. You don't need someone to bring it to you. Why? Who does? Who gives you saving faith? Because this is what this is all about. The conditions or the prerequisites to saving faith. Who gives you saving faith? Well, don't they say that is what Paul said in Ephesians chapter 2, that faith is the gift? That's what they say. But in Ephesians 2, faith is not the gift. Grace is the gift. We choose whether or not to have faith. But they would say that who gives us a faith? Who makes us believe? What's their answer if you don't need that? And I've been told that you don't have anyone, you don't have to read it. You don't have to have anyone preach it to you. You don't have to have anyone tell you. So what's the answer? Who does it in their thinking? What's that, Laura? Exactly. Exactly. It's the Spirit gives it to you. So you don't need the Word. You don't need somebody to tell it to you. But that is a direct contradiction to what the Word says. That's what Paul says. Paul says, and he's expecting an affirmative answer here, how are they going to call when they've not believed? How will they believe if they have not heard? Then how will they hear without a herald, without a preacher? How will they preach unless they are sent? Now, and he said, just as it is written, this is taken from Isaiah, how beautiful are the feet of those who bring good news of good things. Literally, what it means is how welcoming is the word to those who bring it. Now, Paul is not, people have and have used this for justification, the fact that we need to support missions. But this is, you can use it for that. However, that's not what Paul is dealing with.
Paul's not about talking about sending out missionaries. You have to keep this in the context. He's talking about his kinsmen. He's talking about the Jews. Yes, we can relate it to today. But he says, how will they preach unless they are sent? The heralds. How will they hear without a herald? They're not going to hear without a herald. They're not going to believe without that. And he says, how will they preach unless they are sent? Just as it is written, how beautiful are the feet of those who bring good news of good things. What's the good news of good things? See, this is what people are missing. We, you and I as Christians, we have the greatest news in the world. I heard an old story years ago about, you probably aren't familiar with his name and who he is, but he was, years ago, you talk about mega churches. He had the first mega church. First Christian Church in Canton, Ohio. P.H. Welshemer. Had over 2,000 people, and that was back in the, before they even thought of mega churches. That was back in the 30s and the 40s. He preached at First Christian, just like Brother Word preached in Portland. He preached there for over 50 years. He once had, across the street from the church, was an Episcopalian church. This is a true story. The Episcopalian priest walked over to Brother Welshmer's study, walked over to the church, went to his study, and they talked. And this is what this priest, Episcopalian priest, said. He told him, and I'm going to paraphrase it because I don't remember the exact words, but he told Brother Welshmer that you people have got it right. And you have the greatest news that we need. But he said, why are you so... people so stingy with it? Why aren't you out there sharing it? And the upshot of it was that Brother Welshmer shared the word with him, and this guy became a Christian. He repented and he was immersed in an Episcopalian. See, you see, and that's what Paul's saying here, how beautiful are the feet of those who bring good news. We ourselves, we are beautiful, what Paul says, when we bring that good news. But the good news, what is that good news? People say, well, it's go to heaven. Well, yes, we do want that, don't we? But the good news has more and more to do with that than that. The good news is that we have forgiveness of our sins. And eternity comes along with that. But part of that good news that we are missing, that we're going to come to when we come to Romans 12, is this: sonship, daughtership with God. It's this. It's transformation of our spirit. That's what it's all about. We got to get that through to people. Now, Paul goes on and he said, now he's dealing in the context of the Jews here. Yes, we can apply this and relate this to today. Notice what he says in verse 16. However, they did not all heed the good news. For Isaiah says, Lord, who has believed our report? Who has believed what we said? Now we know that Isaiah was a prophet. He said, Lord, who has believed our report? However, they did not all heed the good news. Well, why didn't they heed it? Was it because they were ignorant of it? Because they didn't understand? Because they didn't hear it? Because they didn't have someone bring it to them? Or because the Spirit just didn't zap them, didn't choose them? What some would say, and some believe, but look at what he says here. They did not all heed it. It's because they chose not to. Yes. He said, that doesn't mean that some didn't heed it. We know that some did heed it. That's what Paul's going to go on and say here. Then he says, and this puts the lie to those who say that faith doesn't have conditions. Because look at what Paul said. So faith comes from what? Comes from hearing. And hearing by the word of Christ. It's not just hearing something or anything, it's hearing the word of Christ. Faith comes from hearing. You have to hear it first. That's why it's doubly on us, those of us who are preachers and evangelists, when we bring the word. Important that we understand what it says. If we're bringing it to people and they're hearing it. Because we're going to be judged by that. We're going to be judged on that. Anything, all of us, even as Christians, anything that we teach another person, we better be sure that it goes along with this. Because we're going to be held accountable for it. Because Paul says faith comes from hearing. We want people to believe. Spirit's not just going to zap them. They need to hear. And hearing the word of Christ. Now notice what he says here. He's talking to, again, to his kinsmen. But it also relates to us, as well as everyone today. He says, but I say, surely they have never. He's talking about anticipating someone objecting to what he's saying here. Because he says, but I say, surely they've never heard, have they? Paul is saying that there could be an objection rather than say, well, there, Paul, you know, now maybe the Jews have an excuse. Because surely they've never heard, have they? Paul says, indeed they have. And he quotes again Isaiah. Their voice has gone out into all the earth, and their words to the ends of the world. Now, some want to say that, well, Paul's contradicting himself right there because, you know, that the gospel, even in Paul's day, could have went throughout all the world and everybody hear it. You know, it had to be people like in China or in some of the other countries far away from the Roman Empire. They hadn't heard it yet. People that the Indians, my native family here in America, they hadn't heard it yet, unless you're a Mormon. They hadn't heard it yet. So what do you mean, Paul? This is a conflict. This is a contradiction. No, it's not. You got to keep it in context. The they that who he is talking about here, it's not everyone. He is focusing on the Jews. We know from the scriptures, every place where Paul went to proclaim the good news of Christ, where did he first go? He always went to a synagogue or where the Jews were meeting. He brought the gospel to the Jews first. Then he turned to the Gentiles. It wasn't until they refused to listen that he turned to the Gentiles. What Paul is referring to here, when he quotes this, he is talking about the Jews. They indeed have heard. But he says, verse 19, "But I say, surely Israel did not know, did they?" That's that objector here that Paul is answering. That would be their excuse. "Well, surely they did not know." But why did they not know? Because, again, they chose not to. It's not because they couldn't know. It's not because they couldn't understand. But they chose not to. They stopped their eyes. They closed their eyes. They stopped their ears so they wouldn't have to hear it and didn't want to hear it. People today, what do they do? Talk just about the Jews, but we talk about people today. They stop their ears and they close their eyes. Why? Because they choose not to hear and they don't want to hear. Faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word of Christ. Faith doesn't come through Buddha. It doesn't come. Did you know that what Brother Pemberton has to deal with in India? Did you know that? What he has to deal with? Did you know that in Hinduism? This will blow your mind. I think I mentioned this before, but this will blow your mind. Did you know that in Hinduism there are over 330 million gods and goddesses in Hinduism? So just about everything and anything you want could become a god or goddess in Hinduism. Over 330 million. See? Do people have an excuse? People will say, yeah, they do. They stop their ears, close their eyes. But not just over, say, and over in the other countries, but right here they do. They don't want to hear it, let alone see it. Why? Because it's got to do with pride. It's got to do with this. It's got to do with what John said, all sin, and you go back to Adam and Eve. All sin can be put down into three categories. The lust of the what? The lust of the eyes. The lust of the flesh. And the boastful pride of life encompasses it all. But in the end, don't you think there's going to be some people to say, "Well, I never knew. I never heard. I never saw those things. Why have an excuse?" I think the Lord's going to say, "Yeah, you did. You refused to listen. You refused to see. Because why? Because this is what it's all about, brothers and sisters, what Paul is trying to get through. It's God's way or it's man's way." And many, God's going to say, like Frank Sinatra said, you know, "You did it your way. I did it my way." God's going to say, "I gave you the way. It's my way." People don't like the idea either, you see, that God, I like to term him like my mentor in Maine, professor in Bible college, Dr. Jim Strauss, would say that God is a benevolent dictator. Because, see, what it comes down to, it's God's way or not. But if people just realize that with God's way, they truly be happy. They truly have it all. So you see what Paul is saying here then. He says, indeed they have. Their voice gone out into all the earth and their words to the ends of the world. He's talking about the Jews. Now they have heard. But I say, verse 19, surely Israel did not know, did they? And he quotes Moses' final speech from Deuteronomy chapter 32. First, Moses says, I will make you jealous by that which is not a nation. And boy, did they. By a nation without understanding will I anger you. Who's he talking about? He's talking about the Gentiles. That the Jews would not like that. Because after all, hey, we're Jews. We're the children of Israel. Abraham's our father. Moses is our head. He's the one who gave us the law. We got it made. But even Moses says that God's going to use the Gentiles to provoke the Jews to jealousy. And then he says, and Isaiah is very bold and says, I was found by those who did not seek me. I became manifest to those who did not ask for me. Who's he talking about? He's talking about the Gentiles. Us. And then he says, and this puts the lie to those who believe that God chooses some and he doesn't choose others. Because notice what Paul says here in the end. And it ends pessimistically. I have to say, tell you this. It's a discouraging word. But then we're going to get to chapter 11. He says, but as for Israel, he says, he's quoting Isaiah again, speaking about God. All the day long I have stretched out. It means he is inviting, he's urging, he's supplicating. I have stretched out my hands to a disobedient and obstinate people. Now, if God has already created some for goodness, you know, for heaven, but then he created some for destruction, which is what they want to believe. Why would he say this? Why would he say, all the day long, I've stretched out my hands? Why is he stretching out his hands all the day long? But doesn't that signify that God is patient? Doesn't it also signify his desire? If he created some for destruction and some for already going to heaven, that would not make sense. But it says that he stretches out his hands. Now he's talking, Paul is talking here, and that's why it ends on a very discouraging note. But it does get encouraging again, as I say, as we look to chapter 11. To a disobedient and obstinate people. See, the Jews would understand what Paul was saying. Because you read through the prophets, and consistently God says, my people are rebellious. My people are disobedient. My people are obstinate, but I stretch out my hands. And now, let's bring this back down to us and to the world around about us, not just the Jews. Is God still stretching out his hands? Does he still desire for people to come to him, to have salvation? Yes, he does. Not just the Jews, but everyone. But again, What are people? God knows who he created. Disobedient and obstinate people. But yet he still stretches out his hands. He desires. But is he going to make? See? Is he going to make people obedient? Is he going to make people quit being obstinate and stubborn? Having their own will, because that's what it's really all about. Having their own will. He's not, is he? And that's why he continues to stretch out his hands through his son. He desires people to come to him. But the key is what Paul is saying. That's why he lays out the condition to the Jews. They can say, oh, we have an excuse. We're ignorant. We don't understand. Nope. Paul said, nope, that won't work. That's why Paul says in Hebrews, first he spoke through the fathers. Then he spoke through the prophets. Last of all, he spoke through his son. That's the whole issue of the parable of the vineyard owner that Jesus is talking about. The whole issue of the parable of the prodigal son. People miss it if they do not see that from the Jewish context, from the Jews' context. The elder son was the Jews. The prodigal son was one who went and did something that Jews would never do. Go and feed the pigs. Eat with the pigs. No Jew would ever do that. And Jesus was saying, my people are like that. But there are those who will come. See. So Jesus is saying to us here, and to Paul, what he's saying here. Jews never got it. So many people today don't get it. They do not realize. They don't like us saying these things, by the way. They want us to be, you know, we give them everybody warm fuzzies. Make everybody feel good. Well, yes, we want to feel good. In Christ, we should feel good. We have the joy of the Lord. But there's going to come a day when just what happened, exactly what happened to the Jews, in Jesus' day. That's why Jesus said, oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how I would love if you be like a mother hen and take you under my wing, but you refused. And so what did God say? What was God's response when he rejected his son? Baal and temple was split in two. God said, that's done with it. No more temple. There will be no more temple built that God will inhabit. God inhabits his people. The church is the new Israel. And people miss that if they don't understand that, you see. So God allowed the Romans in 70 AD to destroy Jerusalem once again. For the last time, destroyed the temple. Temple's never been rebuilt since. And I don't care what anybody wants to say, it will never be rebuilt again. Jesus will come before that takes place. He is the last sacrifice. That's what it says. See? But yet, God is still patient for people to come. See? But there's going to come a time when, guess what? He's going to turn to his son and say, son, we're going to bring it all to an end. Space-time, and as my creation knows, it's going to be done. Beginning, end. Jesus said, I'm the Alpha and the Omega. I'm the beginning and I'm the end. What Jesus was saying in that, it said, it began with me, the Word, I became incarnate. It's going to end with me. But people aren't going to like it. The end when he comes. If they're not what? if they're not with him. See, the same we're going to sing, trust and obey. That's why it's so important, see. Trust and obey, that's what it's all about. That's what Paul is saying there. Faith comes by hearing. Hearing this. Believing it. Not just hearing. Because one can hear and not believe. See, that's again what Paul is saying there.